Penguin Random House Audio presents Troop 6000, the Girl Scout troop that began in a shelter and inspired the world, by Nikita Stewart. Read for you by Robin Miles. To Joanne, who saved up enough money to buy me a Brother word processor and a Pentax camera to support me in my dream of becoming a journalist. 1. Queen's People of the Week. Haley smoothed down her wavy hair and tried not to be nervous. She was 13, and it was a big deal being on television. If you lived in New York and had cable, the city's 24-hour news channel, New York One, was the first thing you saw when you turned on the TV. Haley took another deep breath and thought about what she might say to the interviewer. The butterflies in her stomach danced the way they did every year on the first day of school. It was a Wednesday in July 2016, and the humidity was so high that her hair, which she'd combed into a half-up, half-down style, had turned into a sort of billowing afro in the back. It was puffier than she had planned. Haley told herself that was okay because no one could see the back, right? She sat perched on the edge of the brown leather sofa in the lobby of Pam's Place, a homeless shelter for single women in Long Island City, Queens, tugging at her khaki Girl Scouts vest to straighten it. Then the reporter, a friendly brown-haired woman whose calm voice helped put Haley at ease, started asking her questions. The camera zoomed in and out on Haley's face. Although her 13-year-old body had grown into an adult one seemingly overnight, a fact that she hated, because now men and boys stared at her and sometimes made rude remarks, her baby face was unchanged, and when she smiled as she did now, it lit up, looking almost cherubic. Months earlier in November, her troop, the Girl Scouts of Sunnyside and Woodside, had served a Thanksgiving lunch to the women who lived at Pam's Place. Now Haley, her sisters Karina and Christina, and the rest of their troop, who were always doing community service, volunteering to clean up a park or to bring cheer to children with chronic illnesses, had returned to Pam's Place as part of Operation Cookie, a service project that allowed customers to buy the coveted cookies and donate to people whose spirits needed lifting, like veterans, military personnel, senior citizens, and people experiencing homelessness. The scouts then delivered the cookies. A couple of reporters, including the one who was sitting across from her now, showed up to cover the event. The troop had picked Haley to represent them on camera that day. Her mother, Giselle, was a leader of the troop and worked as a community development specialist for the Girl Scouts of Greater New York. So even though Haley had been a Girl Scout for only 2.5 years, she knew a lot about Girl Scouting and the history of the organization. And although she was a little shy, which may not have made her an obvious choice as a public representative, she was thoughtful and affable. "People do so much for us, and the least we can do is do something for them," Haley told the reporter. She blinked, paused, and then smiled as she tried to think of what else to say. "The women in the shelter have experienced many hardships and are really struggling. To see us come in and do all these things for them really makes their day." After the interview, New York One collected footage of Haley standing with her sisters in their Girl Scout vests. Within the Scouts, girls were organized based on grades in school. Haley's khaki vest indicated that she was an older Scout. She was going into the 8th grade and was a cadet. Karina, who was approaching her 11th birthday, would be a 5th grader, so she wore the green vest of a junior Girl Scout. Christina's vest was brown. At 7 years old, she would start 2nd grade in the fall, which made her a brownie. All three of them tried not to look at the camera as they handed out thin mints and Samoas and Dosey-Dos, but they couldn't help it. It was television, after all, and they were going to be on it. 2 days later, on Friday, the sisters and their younger siblings, Jalesi and Judas, who were 2 and 3, gathered in their grandmother's living room to watch the segment. Giving back is a way of life for 13-year-old Haley Vicente. The reporter narrated as Haley's face appeared on the flat-screen TV that hung on the wall of the cramped apartment where her mother, Giselle, had grown up. The apartment never got a lot of natural light, but the dimness made it cozy and familiar. And on that day, with everyone piled into the living room, squeezing onto the worn faux leather couch, it felt especially homey. They were all there, Haley's mother, sisters, and brother, along with Evelyn and Manny, Giselle's mother and stepfather, and Mateo and Miranda, Giselle's half-brother and half-sister. And all were proud of Haley for speaking so eloquently about helping people who did not have homes of their own. The segment was called Queen's People of the Week, and for the 1 minute and 45 seconds that it played, Haley and her mother and siblings forgot about their secret. Few people outside the family knew about it, certainly not the girls' classmates, not even the scouts who had helped them give out cookies at Pam's place. And if the nice reporter from New York One had, for some inexplicable reason, asked Haley about it, Haley would have lied to her. The secret was that Haley and her family were homeless, too. The eviction had happened just days before the television interview. Even though the description in court records read, forcible entry detainer, nobody had beaten down any doors or strong-armed their way in. Giselle had known this moment was coming for at least 2 months, and she'd opened her apartment door without protest to allow her landlord and the marshal entry. The day before, she'd explained to her 5 children what was about to take place. "Mommy has some bad news," she said, talking more to the youngest 3, Christina, Jalesi, and Judas, than to Haley and Karina. "Unfortunately, we can't stay here anymore. The owner needs us to leave. I tried to find a new house, but it's hard, and I don't have enough money or anyone to help us find a home." Haley could see that toddler Jalesi and preschooler Judas had no idea what was happening, and that 7-year-old Christina was confused, too. Giselle was trying hard not to cry. Her voice quavered, but she willed herself to keep talking, as if this wasn't a terrible thing. She said they were going to a homeless shelter, just for a short time, until they could figure out their next move. "It will be scary because it's something different and new. But we won't be there long, and I promise we will make it fun." Giselle smiled, like she often did, to hide her emotions. "Fun," Haley thought. What about losing their home could possibly be fun? As the firstborn, Haley was her mother's right hand. Her name was tattooed alongside an angel on Giselle's arm. While she challenged her mother inwardly, she could see that Giselle was not only upset, but scared. She kept her head down and started packing. When the landlord and the marshal arrived the next morning, Giselle had already packed her clothes and was stuffing throw pillows and photo albums into thin black garbage bags. She wasn't crying, thank goodness for that, because if she had started crying, her children would have too. But Haley could tell that she was just barely keeping it together. It was Haley and Karina's job to finish clearing out the kitchen. The day before, Giselle had bought moving boxes at a nearby Home Depot, and now Haley worked to fill them as quickly and purposefully as she could. Even though her chest was so tight, she was having trouble breathing, and her heart was pounding so hard she thought it might explode. Karina, never big on doing chores but always eager to obey, was working especially slowly, methodically transferring red plastic bowls from the kitchen's cabinets to the boxes. Haley noticed that she kept staring off blankly into space.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?